Well, we turn now to the very often hotly debated topic of cryptocurrency. Leaders from across the Australian crypto market say that Senator Jane Hume's calls for a cautious embrace of crypto assets should send a very strong signal to policymakers and the market alike. Senator Hume, who is Australia's Minister for Financial Services and the Digital Economy, says that she believes that embracing innovative financial technologies such as blockchain, crypto and decentralised finance is necessary to maintain Australia's competitiveness. Her comments come off the back of the RBA labelling the asset class as a fad last week. She very kindly joins us now on The Daily. Senator Hume, a warm welcome.
Great to be with you, Tina. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've compared doubters of crypto, those who say that it's not here to stay, you've compared them to those who thought the iPhone would never take off. Now, the RBA the RBA only last week has cautioned that a crypto crash is imminent. Their outgoing head of payments policy, Tony Richards, gave a number of scenarios as to why this might occur. Do you think any of them are plausible?
Well, let's take a step back. I think what I said was that the last 20 or 30 years have taught us, if anything, that innovation begins as disruption and then it ends as a household name, and that cryptocurrency is just that. It's a very significant disruption, but it's a really exciting innovation. And, you know, you wouldn't want to be the person that said that the internet was just a place for geeks and criminals back in 1995. You wouldn't want to be the person that still does their financial models by hand with a pencil on some paper rather than using Excel. And you wouldn't want to be the person that thought that the iPhone was never going to take off because people preferred their music and their telephone on separate devices. So I think it's important that we have a really open mind toward cryptocurrency, but not just cryptocurrency, more importantly, decentralized finance or DeFi and the technology that sits underneath it, blockchain technology, which doesn't just have applications in crypto. It has applications that we can apply to all sorts of parts of the economy. And that's really exciting.
Right. But back to my actual question about Tony Richards' comments. Do you think any of the scenarios that he's presented are plausible? You know, saying, for instance, if central banks move towards issuing central bank distributed currencies such as stable coins, you know, it would offer faster, safer and probably more efficient transactions, which might change how people use and view cryptocurrencies.
Well, potentially, obviously, CBDCs and stable coins are a very different proposition to the cryptocurrencies that people are investing in right now. The RBA doesn't equate digital currency with a fiat currency, and it doesn't treat cryptocurrency as money. But it is looking at what a wholesale central bank digital currency would look like and what uses it may have. But that's very different from a retail cryptocurrency, and so I'm not entirely sure whether it would take the heat out of the cryptocurrency market simply looking at a wholesale CBDC. But that's a look. It's really important that the RBA is turning its mind to the opportunities here.
Right. So a Senate report on fintech recently estimated that about 17% of Australians held cryptocurrency assets. However, the RBA have said that this estimate is implausible. They've disputed this, basically. What's your response to that?
Well, it's very hard to tell how many Australians own cryptocurrency. In fact, that 17% was verified by two different sources. And it always surprises me when I meet people who does, in fact, hold cryptocurrency. I took my car to the panel beaters the other day, for instance, and my 60-plus-year-old Armenian panel beater was telling me that he owns Bitcoin. I was absolutely blown away by that. So I think that there are a lot of Australians. It's an asset class that really has captured hearts and minds. But the most important thing is that when you are investing in any asset class, and it doesn't matter whether it's cryptocurrency or equities or, emu farms, whatever it is you're investing in, you feel that you understand what that investment is and you're prepared to take the risks that are associated with it. Because we know that cryptocurrency, the price of cryptocurrencies really just reflects what people are willing to pay for it. So it can be, you know, massively volatile, can fluctuate wildly based on market speculations from things like media focus or influencers or finfluencers. So when you invest in cryptocurrency, you've really got to be prepared to lose everything. That said, it's a genuine asset class, and we're seeing superannuation funds, for instance, I think Host came out yesterday and said that it was looking at potentially investing a small proportion in cryptocurrency. Rest came out today and said the same. Australian Super just on Monday said it wasn't interested in cryptocurrency because it doesn't deliver an income stream. So it really depends on the rest of your investments as to whether crypto fits neatly into your portfolio, and also whether you're prepared to ride the wild ride.
I want to turn now to the regulatory side of this and some of the implications there. Now, the corporate watchdog has said that Australia's corporate watchdog has said it's working with lawmakers to develop rules for digital currencies, but they've warned that many crypto assets, they do remain unregulated for now, which is leaving investors with such products basically on their own. What sort of regulation would you like to see to make sure that people are protected?
Well, if it's a financial and product investment, well, the ASIC then does have oversight of financial products. If it's a crypto asset that isn't a financial product, that's something like a utility or a subscription, that's really the purview of the ACCC. So there is some regulation. And on top of that, AUSTRAC is responsible for looking at the anti-money laundering and the counter-terrorism financing aspects of it. So there is some regulation of cryptocurrency there. Most importantly, I think, for your listeners, Tina, is to understand that you can still have to pay your tax on any profits you make on cryptocurrency. Tax obligations still apply. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And the tax office can see the on-ramps and the off-ramps of cryptocurrency. So that's how your tax obligations arise. So there is some regulation, but it is a new space. And I suppose my message was that we should be treading carefully and cautiously in this space. We don't want to over-regulate it to a point where we stifle innovation. At the same time, neither do we want to ban particular investments. We want people to be able to make investments should they want to, as long as they go into it with their eyes wide open and don't expect to, compensation from the government, for instance, or from industry, financial industry, if their investments go south.
Right. Look, just before, we are sort of nearly out of time, but before you go, I did want to shift the conversation now to the PM's long-awaited religious discrimination bill. Now, it's finally been released, and he's actually set to introduce the bill himself, and it's outlining how the federal government intends to enshrine greater protections for people of faith. And will introduce laws that include a provision to shield Australians who make statements of belief from state anti-discrimination and equal opportunity laws. There's a bit of concern about this because it's obviously protecting people from being discriminated against for their faith, but it does seemingly then allow religious or faith-based institutions to discriminate against others based on their own personal faith or lack thereof or, their own sexuality. It does seemingly enable that. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, the Religious Freedoms Bill is first and foremost delivering on a promise that was made at the last election by this government and by the Prime Minister personally to protect Australians from discrimination on the grounds of their religious belief. There has been enormous amounts of consultation on the bill, and the government is taking a very considered and middle path and sets out a very carefully considered and balanced approach to this very, very important issue. Because, let's face it, Australians shouldn't experience discrimination because of their religion or their lack of religion as they go out about their daily lives. It does allow religious organisations such as schools to give preference to the people of their same religion as the religious as the religious body in those employment decisions. But critically, I think, and this is very important for your listeners to understand, Tina, that the bill will not allow discrimination on the basis of any other protected attributes such as age or disability or race or gender or sexual orientation. The Religious Discrimination Bill actually is, it remedies a significant omission from the federal anti-discrimination framework.
I understand that, but the criticism is that it will license people to make decisions, on who they hire or, as a medical practitioner on who they might like to treat, based on that person's religion or their sexual orientation. And it also allows people to make statements that some might find incredibly discriminatory and not face any repercussions to that. The Israel Falau case has been cited as a great example of what could have happened if these laws were in place at that time.
Well, in fact, there was an element of the original bill that pertained to, you know, the Folau employment amendments, if you like, that have been removed. And you know, there's been so much consultation done on this. Can I tell you, there was 13,000 written submissions, round tables with more than 90 stakeholders in all key sectors, and that included from religious and legal and LGBTIQ plus and community groups. So the revisions to this bill to ensure that it provides the best possible protections have been, you know, implemented to for all Australians, not simply those of religion or those of faith, but also those without faith as well.
So you're not concerned that this will encourage people to basically say hate speech in the name of religion?
No, that is certainly not the intention, and neither does it override existing legislation. In the state-based legislation as well, those existing anti-discrimination laws. So, look, I think that your listeners can take great comfort. While it's being introduced into the House of Representatives, it will go to Senate, it will go to a Senate committee where every single scenario will be unpicked and unpacked, and all of those stakeholders that have, you know, something important to say will have an opportunity to re-prosecute the case in Senate committee. That's how we get this sort of important legislation done and make sure that when it's voted on, that it's right.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to those Senate hearings with yourself and others, no doubt. Senator Hume, thank you so much for joining us on The Daily this morning.
Great to be with you, Tina. Thank you for having me.
That was Senator Jane Hume. She is Australia's Minister for Superannuation, Financial Services and the Digital Economy, joining us there.